I started out this morning in the usual way, chasing thoughts inside my head of all I had to do today. Another time around the circle, try to make it better than the last. I opened up the Bible and I read about you and me. Said we'd all been prisoners, and God's grace had set us all free. Somewhere between the pages, it hit me like a lightning bolt. I saw a big frontier in front of me, and I heard somebody say, let's go. Saddle up your horses, we've got a trail to blaze. Through the wild blue yonder, I've got amazing grace. Let's follow our leader into the glorious unknown. This is a life like no other.
Yes, it is a great adventure. We're in the third week of our series that we're going through called The Great Adventure. Today it's a step up to the plate. We'll be talking about Moses, and we're going to get into Exodus chapter 3 and reading through 3 and 4 and stuff like that. But before we get into that, you know, it was 4 weeks ago, 1 month ago, that me and a bunch of the guys, we traveled down to Modesto for a softball tournament. Softball. Ball. And you take this 12-inch ball, and the idea is, I'm a pitcher. I got one job. One job in this whole thing. Okay, I had to stop for a second. The reason I said ball is over here, they're playing bingo, and ball is a clue for one of them, right? Who's got ball? All right, Tori's got one. Okay, keep listening then, because they're listening for words. So the idea is to take this 12-inch ball, and it's 12 inches around, right, Aaron? Okay, Aaron and I measured earlier. It is 12 inches around. I knew it was. And I'd be standing on the ground, and I'm back about this far. And I take the ball, and I am supposed to throw it between 6 and 12 foot arch, basically to where Tim is sitting, the back wall where the glass wall is. So you launch it from here, and you're supposed to hit a plate that is this size. Okay, easy, right? Piece of cake to launch it from there and drop it right on that plate. John, you want to try it? That's all I got to do. I'm the pitcher. That's all I got to do. Stand back. It's about 50, 55 feet. So you're back about this far, and you just take it and you just launch it. And it flies through and it hits. Well, we got out there and we didn't do as well as we'd expected once we got there. In the round robin play, we had kind of a tough draw. And we won one game and we lost four. So we get seated and we go into the seating on Saturday night and we win our first game in the seating. So we basically Saturday we ended up 2 wins, 4 losses. And we went into Sunday, we went to church Sunday and sang Amazing Grace in our uniforms and everything. And then we showed up on the field. And we get out there and we're playing Kings Athletic Club Green. And I get out there to pitch and it's a close game. And we're going back and forth. We get into the last inning, it's tied. We go into extra innings, and my job is to pitch. And we have a lead, a one-run lead, going into it, and we pitch, and I'm not doing great. Can't drop the ball in there. They actually tie the game, bases loaded, guy gets up, and I pitch 4 balls. I might have had a strike in there somewhere, but I pitch 4 balls. Now, they're not like they're missing way off. I mean, they're missing by a quarter inch, but if you miss that strike, Matt, then it's a ball. And the guy just stood there, never once did even attempt to move his bat. I walked in the winning run. They won on a walk. So now this is beside all of that. So what I did as soon as we got back is I said, that's not happening again. I took my strike mat and I made it 2 inches smaller. So now I pitch onto that. Next year it won't happen, I hope. So I pitch. And before the games, you have the two teams, we get together and we circle around pitcher's mound and we have a word of prayer. It's just a great time. And after the game, we gather around for a word of prayer. Most of the time. Right, John? The game was over and stuff like that. And the guy walks in and I walk to our base, our dugout that we have. And instead of stopping at the dugout, I head on down and I walk and I walked outfield. I was so mad that I couldn't pitch a strike. So mad that the guy didn't swing. Guys on my team, they would have been swinging because they were there. The pitches were there. It's not like they were missing by a lot. But most of all, I think I was upset, frustrated because I let the guys down. I have one job, to pitch a strike, and I couldn't do it. So I walked. I continued to walk. I walked all the way to the outfield fence and turned around and walked back. By the time I got back there, they had already had the word of prayer. Most of the guys were gone. The dugout was cleared, and they had cleared out and stuff like that. We'll get back to that story in just a little bit. You may remember that last week we were talking about Noah and how he was able to stand against the wicked and corrupt culture of his day. And that was all due to his relationship with God. And before that, we looked at Abraham and how he was called to go on this great adventure. God told him to pack everything up and to take off. And never really even told him where he was going to. And he finds himself in Canaan. And then at 100 years old, he finds out that he and Sarah are going to have kids. Talk about an adventure. Right, Rich? Right, Amy? Imagine that. But before we get into our text in Exodus chapter 3, let's remember a little bit about Moses here. He wasn't exactly born with a silver spoon in his mouth, but he had one placed there pretty quickly. Exodus 1 and 2, it tells us Moses' story. You see, the Israelites, they had been in bondage for about 400 years, and their numbers had become so great that Pharaoh became paranoid that things just might get out of hand. See, their numbers, they threatened his power and possibly even his claim to the throne. So he sets out a decree and says that all the male Hebrews must be killed at birth. But somehow Moses' midwives let him live. So Pharaoh begins this national campaign to eradicate all the boys. Doing the only thing that she knew to do, Moses' mother, that's always fun to try to say, Moses' mother hides him. And when she could hide him no longer, she takes him in and she places him in a basket that is made of reeds. And she places him along the Nile River where she knows that he will be found. And he is found. He's actually found by the daughter of the Pharaoh who takes him and she raises him as her own. So this young Hebrew, he grows up in the household of Pharaoh along with all of the privilege that comes with that. He had the best food, wine, clothes, jewelry, an education, a life of privilege and prestige, a prince of Egypt. What potential he had. Think about all that Moses could have accomplished with what he had been given. Did you know that back in 2006, William Buffett, who is this investment billionaire, he wowed the world when he gave nearly $37 billion. Get that? $37 billion to the Bill Gates Foundation. In an interview, they asked his children if they were upset that their dad gave away so much money to this charity and not to them. The kids, they all seemed remarkably normal. See, Buffett had said that he would give his children enough money to do something with, but not enough money to do nothing. It's kind of wise, isn't it? Give them enough money to do something with, but not enough money so they don't have to do anything. And like Buffett's children, Moses would have grown up with plenty. He didn't need anything. And he had so much potential to do some mighty things. But you all may know that somewhere along the line, his life takes this dramatic turn. One day he witnesses an Egyptian slave master who is beating one of the Hebrew slaves, just mercilessly beating him. Now, despite his wealth and privilege, somehow Moses knew that he wasn't one of them. He knew he wasn't an Egyptian. He still had a connection with his own people. He knew he was a Hebrew. And somehow that must have built up inside of him this struggle, this thing that was going on. And it drove him to kill the slave master. And then you try to hide and to conceal the body. But Pharaoh finds out, and he takes off after Moses, and he's trying to capture Moses. So Moses is on the run. Moses is forced to flee, to run away from everything that he had known. His home, his privilege, his family, all of that for a life as a desert nomad. For the next 40 years, he would go about rebuilding his life. He takes a wife and he busies himself tending his father-in-law's sheep, starting over as it were. How exciting, working for your father-in-law day after day, year after year, for 40 years. This was his life, tending somebody else's sheep. At the age of 80, he probably thought that his life was done. That was it for him. He probably expected to live out the rest of his life, the rest of his days out there in the desert, watching sheep. A far cry from where his life could have taken him. I wonder, in Moses' mind, if those days of wealth and privilege were a distant memory. See, the hopes, the dreams, the ambitions of a bright, young prince of Egypt, they would have long been forgotten. Moses had settled. He had accepted the hand that had been dealt him. He had missed his chance to do anything really special with his life, and he'd probably accepted that maybe this was all there was going to be for him. Somehow, Jim Morris must have longed for something more. You see, in 1999, Jim Morris was a 36-year-old father, teacher, and a high school coach who thought that his childhood dream of making it to the major leagues was over. See, he'd had his shot 12 years earlier as a young man, but a shoulder injury put him on the bench and forced him to retire before he ever made it to the big leagues. But he was a coach, and he was coaching his son's high school team who had never, ever before made the playoffs. And he made a bet with them that if they won the district championships, he would try out for the majors. Guess what happened? He got it. To everybody's surprise, they actually won. So Jim Morris, he finds himself at tryouts. And they decide to, at his age, they decide to let him try out simply so that he can keep his side of the bet with his team, his son's team. He found out that he could still throw a 98-mile-an-hour fastball. He threw 12 of them in a row. He made the team, to everybody's surprise. And he found himself stepping up to the plate in the major leagues at 36 years old. And he played for 2 seasons. With Tampa Bay before he had to retire. See, Jim Morris was fortunate because he got another chance at bat. Now, you may remember that when I started all this off, I talked about softball. And I told you about a game where I didn't pitch so great. And I told you I walked to the end and I got back in. And as I walked back to where our dugout was, most of the dugout was cleared out by this time. The guys had picked things up and they grabbed all the bats and even a bunch of my stuff. And they were walking. They were walking down the sidewalk to another field that was right there. You see, the way the tournament's set up, when you lose and you're out, you play back to back. So they're all walking down there. A couple of guys had stuck behind, and some of them said, "Hey, Val, it's all right. We still got another game. We still need you to pitch." So I grabbed my glove and I walked to the other field, field number 5. Where, believe it or not, we actually got to play against our own team for the second time. We played against Richmond Yellow. And I got out there and I pitched. I could hit that strike mat, no problem. We didn't win that game either, other circumstances and things like that. But you see, I was given a second chance. The team, they believed in me. They came up to me and said, "It's okay, don't worry about it. We still got this other game." And I got to pitch. And I can get out there. I don't want to get into it. I can pitch. But I just couldn't. But I was given a second chance. You see, Moses, he was too. He was also given a second chance. And if you've turned there, if you want to, and in chapter 3 of Exodus, you can follow your Bibles, or Aaron will put them up here for you. We'll start at verse 1, and we're going to read through verse 10 right now. And it says, "Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness, and he came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, 'I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up.' When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, 'Moses, Moses.' And Moses said, 'Here I am.' 'Do not come any closer,' God said. 'Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground.' Then he said, 'I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob.' At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, 'I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them cry out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt.'" You see, at that age, life was anything but over for Moses. He may have thought that his life was done, but God was just getting started. He had big things for Moses to do. Did you know that back in July of 2006, Billy Graham, at the age of 87, he preached what he said would probably be his last message to a very large audience. And it was at Camden Yards, a place where the Baltimore Orioles play. Addendum to that. Billy Graham, coming up in November of 2013, is doing a series in the United States that will be broadcast on television. Yes, Andrew? You just waving? Okay. What are slave drivers? Those are people who try to keep slaves oppressed. They take other humans and they make them do all the work for them. Is that one of your words? Billy Graham is getting ready to do a television series across the United States called My Hope, where he's trying to take this idea and get us to turn our televisions on and to preach a message to us. I just think it's really cool. And he started this all the way back in 2002, where he's doing it across other countries and things. And it's just come with a lot of success. But see, at the age of 87, and even now, God, it was just getting started with Moses. Billy Graham is wrapping up, but God is just getting started with Moses. What an adventure that he is calling Moses to. From all those plagues that were brought upon the Egyptians because Pharaoh was unwilling to first let the people go, to their exciting flight out of Egypt, taking the riches and the plunder of the country with them, to being chased by Pharaoh's army into the desert, and then to their miraculous escape through the parting of the Red Sea, and then for 40 years, camping out along the Sinai Peninsula before being allowed to retake the land of promise. And we'll talk more about Joshua next week and the taking of the land. What a great adventure it is that God has called Moses to. What an opportunity for him to get a second chance, an opportunity for him to step up to the plate. And can you believe that Moses, he didn't want to do it? He didn't want to step up to the plate. Despite all that God had done to prepare Moses, when it came down to it, Moses didn't want to go. Let's look at verse 11 of chapter 3. "But Moses said to God, 'Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?'" He begins making excuses. Who am I? And God responds to him by saying, "It doesn't matter who you are. I will be with you." Verse 12 says, "And God said, I will be with you, and this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain." But you know, Moses, he's not done offering excuses. Moses said to God, starting at verse 13 here, Moses said to God, "Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you.' And they ask me, 'What is his name?' Then what shall I tell them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you." God also said to Moses, "Say to the Israelites, 'The Lord, the God of our fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name by which I am to be remembered from generation to generation.'" See, God says it again. It doesn't matter who you are. I am God. But Moses has more objections. If you flip on down to chapter 4, starting at verse 1, Moses answered, "What if they don't believe me or listen to me and say, 'The Lord did not appear to you?' Then the Lord said to him, 'What is that in your hand?' 'A staff,' he replied. The Lord said, 'Throw it on the ground.' So Moses threw it on the ground and it became a snake and he ran from it. Then the Lord said to him, 'Reach out with your hand and take it by the tail.' So Moses reached out and took hold of the snake and it turned back into a staff in his hand. 'This,' said the Lord, 'is so that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has appeared to you.'" Proof positive right there. How many of you have ever taken a stick and thrown it on the ground and turned into a snake? Exactly. And then he grabbed it again and it turned back in. That way the people would know. Proof positive right there. But if you get to verse 10, look at Moses' next excuse. Moses said to the Lord, "Pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue." This has led many scholars to believe that Moses had some kind of a speech impediment. Maybe he spoke with a stutter or something like that. The very least in all this, he didn't think that he was capable of doing what God was asking him to do. And he pleads with God in verse 13, "Pardon your servant, Lord. Please send someone else." Now, by this time, God is getting pretty angry with Moses. Verse 14 reads like this. "Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses, and he said, 'What about your brother Aaron, the Levite? I know he can speak well. He is already on his way to meet you, and he will be glad to see you. You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth. I will help both of you speak and will teach you what to do. He will speak to the people for you. It will be as if he were your mouth and as if you were God to him." Can you believe God has something great for Moses to do and Moses doesn't want to do it? Have you ever done that? Have you ever not wanted to do what you knew God wanted you to do? Now, I know none of us would ever be like that, would we? Now, of course, we know that Moses finally accepts and he obeys. And verse 19 and 20 says, "Now the Lord said to Moses in Midian, 'Go back to Egypt, for all those who wanted to kill you are dead.' So Moses took his wife and sons, put them on a donkey, and started back to Egypt. And he took the staff of God in his hand." See, he was finally willing to step up to the plate, to accept what it is that God was giving to him, what God was throwing at him. What about you? What about us? Is God calling on you this morning to step up to the plate? What is it that he's wanting to throw your way? What is he asking you to do? Is he calling on you to step up to the plate and take a greater role in the church? You see, we have three pastors and we have four others who serve on the elder board. Yeah, not everyone's called to be a pastor or an elder. I realize that. But did you know that Paul in Ephesians chapter 4 gives a reason why we have leaders? And he says it is to prepare God's people for works of service. As God's person, What is it that he is preparing you to do? Now, surely he wouldn't have inspired Paul to write this down to God's people if he didn't have something for each one of us to do. So what is that? See, it doesn't have to be leading a nation out of slavery or building an ark. It could be visiting somebody in a nursing home, sending an encouraging note, sending a birthday card, a greeting to somebody, preparing a meal for somebody. It could be teaching a Bible class or going out and just hanging out with the youth or young adults or something like that. Getting involved in the nursery or maybe in children's church. It could be as simple as sitting down with somebody and reading the Bible with them. It could be helping out around the church with some of the different projects that need to get done around here. You see, all of this, I think, is the fun of the Christian life, discovering who you are and what God has given you to do for the kingdom. See, that's where the fun is. The exciting things about being part of a Christian. When Don and I are standing out front and we're remodeling the front of the church and I'm 24 feet in the air on a scaffold and Don's down there and we're working on all that, that's fun. Having fellowship and working together. I see too many Christians who just don't look like they're having any fun. Maybe it's because they haven't figured out how to use what God has given them in works of service for the kingdom. I think that there are too many of us who have settled. We've become content, or we're just satisfied to sit there and be when God has something that we could be doing. John Maxwell, in his book called Running with the Giants, he said, "Sad is the day when a person becomes absolutely satisfied with the life he is living, the thoughts he is thinking, the deeds he is doing. When there forever ceases to beat at the door of his soul a desire to do something greater for God." Don't you have a desire to do something greater for God? Or are you content to just kind of sit on the bench? Do you need to step up and be the child of God that he calls you to be? What is it that has been keeping you on the bench, out of the game? An old injury? Maybe you stepped up back in the day and somebody criticized you, said something about you, did something that you didn't like. Did you know that Lou Gehrig, a baseball player, he was called the Iron Man of baseball? For a reason. He played in 2,130 consecutive games without missing a single one. When he retired after 15 years, they x-rayed his hands and they found out that every single one of his fingers had been broken at one time or another. And yet he never ever missed a game. Is it time to get over that injury that you had and to somehow try to get back into the game? Maybe you're waiting for the fans to settle down and to stop calling you names. Maybe you're waiting for the umpire to start calling the pitches fairly. They're close. Well, don't hold your breath because life isn't fair. Somehow get back into the game. God is calling you to step up to the plate. To step up to this great adventure that he has called each one of us to. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 25 says, "Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last. But we do it to get a crown that will last forever." This morning, as we begin wrapping up, are you aiming for that crown? Are you in the game and aiming for that crown that will last forever? Step up to the plate. Do what it is that God is calling you to. If you're not quite sure what that is, what is it that you have a passion for? What is it that even the simple things that you can do? So you've got to accept him as coach and then follow him and listen to him. And then your life, live your life like that. Have you done that? Are you willing to do that this morning? To step up to the plate?